Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
All the next News One Now, folks. We got a packed show. Flint water crisis. Four more people have been charged in connection with that catastrophe. We'll talk with Mayor Dr. Karen Weaver about these latest charges. Speaking of charges, are you into outdoor sports? You got $1 million to spare? Guess what? Ethical concerns when it comes to Donald Trump's kids. Are they trying to pimp the presidency? Yeah, we're going to talk about that as well. Also, a new survey finds that Donald Trump supporters were motivated by the belief that black people have been getting more than they deserve. Really, what does it mean when America says you're an average American or a real American? Black folks somehow are not included in that equation. Also, the founder and CEO of Operation Hope, John Hope Bryant, joins us to talk about his latest honor from a banking institution and also his innovative program to confront poor communities. We'll talk about that as well. Plus, it's Wednesday. While not Wednesday, we might as well end our year with our comedians because this has been a joke of an election. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now TV One.
The tragedy that we know as the Flint water crisis did not occur by accident. No. Flint was a casualty of arrogance, disdain, and a failure of management, an absence of accountability, shirking responsibility.
Four former state and local officials are now charged in connection with the Flint water crisis. Michigan's Attorney General Bill Schutte says the officials put dollar signs above the health of Flint's residents. Michigan State Emergency Managers Darnell Early and Gerald Ambrose, along with former Flint City Executives Howard Croft and Dougherty Johnson, all face felony charges that carry a penalty of 20 years behind bars. According to Michigan's Attorney General, the four failed to protect Flint citizens from health hazards caused by lead-contaminated drinking water.
All too prevalent and very evident during the course of this investigation has been a fixation on finances and balance sheets. This fixation has cost lives. This fixation came at the expense of protecting the health and safety of Flint. It's all about numbers over people, money over health. Flint deserves better. And the people of Flint are not expendable, so to move on is unacceptable. People in positions of responsibility who broke the law must be held accountable.
This is the third round of charges related to the investigation, bringing the total to 13 folks who have been charged, a number of former state and local officials. Again, these are criminal charges. Joining me via Skype in Flint, Michigan, is Mayor of Flint, Dr. Karen Weaver. Mayor, welcome back to TV One's News One Now.
Thank you. Thank you.
First and foremost, what do you make of these charges? Now, the state has moved to close this investigation, but to have these charges filed, just your immediate reaction.
You know what? We're really glad to see more charges because we know that more people needed to be held accountable than had previously been charged. And that's all we've ever asked for is we want everybody who knew anything about this, we want them held accountable. That is exactly what we deserve. You said it, lives have been lost. We have kids that will never reach their full potential as a result of this. We have other people that are still sick as a result of this. And all of those, what we've asked is we want to know who knew what and when they knew it and hold them accountable.
But now, one of the concerns that folks are having is that, fine, you have these officials, but that more is not being done to target the governor's office because of their decisions, because that was where it came from, these emergency managers. Your thoughts?
Exactly. That is where emergency managers came from. They're appointed by the governor, and they answer only to the governor. And one of the things that they repeated yesterday at the press conference was that there are more to come and they are going to go higher and wider. So we're still waiting to see who else is going to be held accountable in this in this disaster that's happened to Flint.
Speaking of this disaster, what is the current state right now? We know that some federal funds were actually passed recently by after a holdup in the United States Senate. Are you on your way to having the pipes all taken out and new piping put into Flint, Michigan?
That's exactly what we're working on. You know, the weather is not our friend in Michigan because winter is upon us. But as soon as spring hits, we're going to continue with this lead service line replacement. And we need the funds to do that. This $170 million is a great start, but it's not enough, and we're expecting more.
Where do you stand right now when it comes to the drinking water? When President Barack Obama went there, he drank a glass of water. But I've still heard from other residents directly that there is still contaminated water. It is still not safe to drink in Flint. What's the current status?
Well, you just said it. We are still on bottled and filtered water. And we're, you know, closing in on 3 years now. And that makes no sense that we cannot drink water straight from our tap. And while we continue to treat the water, and every time we test it, we get better results, it is still not to the point where we can turn on our taps and drink the water, and that's the problem.
He pretty much ignored Flint, Michigan during the campaign. Have you or anyone in your administration heard from anyone with the Trump transition team when it comes to Flint?
Not directly. You know, there we did hear that he was coming about two and a half weeks ago, but that trip was canceled, and we don't know why. And we have not heard from them since.
All right, then. Flint, Mayor Care, we certainly appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Let's talk with our panel, folks. John Hope Bryant, Chairman, CEO of the Bryant Group Ventures, and also founder of Operation Hope. Angela Rye, Principal and CEO, Impact Strategies. Dr. Greg Carr, Chair, Department of Afro-American Studies, Howard University. Dr. Christopher Metzler, Legal Scholar, Political Scientist, and CEO, JMI Group. Dr. Cleo Monago, Behavioral Health and Culture Analyst as well. All right, folks. And so more charges here. But if you're a resident of Flint, you're going, okay, fine, that's great. But I'm tired of taking a bath and having to cook with some dadgum bottled water.
That's right. And then you see the federal government closing down its investigation. And Judy, who knows who these conversations had with Rick Snyder?
Well, like, 1 second. I think your microphone fell, so just hold 1 second. John.
No, we're going into, you need to fight the injustice. No doubt about that. That's civil rights. We're going in with civil rights. We're actually opening up offices in Flint, Michigan, an announcement to come in about a month, but we're going to help to raise the station and the quality of life in Flint systemically and generationally. But I guess we'll talk about that a little later.
Angela, when we talk about, a governmental breakdown, Republican governor there, they've been fighting a federal order to provide bottled water there as well, and they've been coming up with different excuses. But at the end of the day, the problem here is the residents are still saying, we can't live our life a normal way. The mayor said it's been almost 3 years.
Yeah. I think the biggest frustration I have is how we got to a point in this country where people's ability to live and to thrive is political, is partisan in some kind of way. And most importantly, something that we don't like to talk about, I think particularly given this election, is the racial impact of this, the classist kind of issue in this. And if this were to happen in any rich white community anywhere in the country, this would have been resolved within weeks, not years. What did you say?
Bingo. Wouldn't have happened.
That's or that.
It would have been prevented
poverty.
Before it got to the point that it is now. I mean, it just wouldn't have occurred.
Well, I'm wondering whether this rainbow coalition of people who've been charged so far are sacrificial lambs, and if Snyder survives. I mean, we see this kind of boondoggle he's pulled with unemployed folks in Detroit, $150-some million that they've squeezed from these people illegally. But I mean, it's a Republican Attorney General. So have they already made the deal? And there's only one person in the cabinet who has been whispered about, the head of HHS, I guess, for in that administration, who may be brought up on charges. But I'm thinking, have they already coordinated so that Snyder doesn't get punished for this?
Chris, remember early on, this Attorney General did not want to get involved at all. He was pressured to actually launch a criminal investigation.
Yeah, and I think, in fact, Snyder walks away scot-free, and the people of Flint continue to live a miserable existence relative to water based on his actions. That much, I think, is absolutely clear. Look, at the end of the day, I hear all the stuff about the charges. I understand the criminal aspect of this. But at the end of the day, I need to be able to drink my water. I need to be able to cook. I need to be able to bathe. I need to be able to raise my children. And it's like we can't do both things at the same time.
Angela talked about the issue of when it comes to classism and the rich. Well, let's talk about the rich. Donald Trump and his Donald Trump Jr. and his brother Eric are offering supporters a chance to hang with the incoming first family on January 21st, the day after the inauguration, an event called Opening Day. Folks who donate anywhere from $25,000 to $1 million get a photo with the new president and also take home some presidential swag. Up to 16 people get to be involved in that meeting. Those who donate $500,000 or more get packages called Grizzly Bear and Bald Eagle, respectively. It includes the opening day event plus a multi-day hunting or fishing trip with Eric and Donald Jr. Now, all of a sudden, the Trump transition team is saying, no, 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 that's not the case, even though the two of them are co-founders of the nonprofit that was founded in Texas that's dealing with this. This is raising significant red flags. And my goodness, this follows, of course, where Eric Trump was trying to auction off a coffee with Ivanka Trump for $60,000, $70,000. And look, we've seen previous administrations offer these kind of things, but how naked is it to sit here, how butt-naked is it to say, give $1 million,
yes,
16 people get to get a meeting with the president? I mean, it's the day after. Could you at least wait 90 days?
But the red flag for me, and this is a grifter presidency, this is a family of grifters, but the red flag for me was when he said opening day. One of the four in this whole thing who are owners of this is the son of the former owner of the Texas Rangers and the Dallas North Stars. In other words, you know, and hunting, didn't Scalia die at a hunting trip in Texas? I mean, all this stuff is interlocking, man. But these cats, these Trumps, these are grifters, man. These are grifters. And they only walk it back when they get public outrage. But after he's inaugurated, they may not even care.
But do they walk it back after there's public outrage? I feel like there was public outrage throughout the duration of the election. And I think that Donald Trump Senior digs in, and I certainly think you saw the same thing with his kids. I remember, this is a smaller incident, but I think, again, it demonstrates kind of the classism point. Eric Trump was at an In-N-Out Burger and had, like, the free water cup. You all know the free water
right,
cup that
right.
you get. And filled the cup with lemonade. And we're like, okay, so you can pay a dollar or whatever it is for the lemonade. So I'm just saying these people are not only above the law, but above the rules, above the optics. And I think we saw that throughout the duration of the campaign.
John, here's part of the problem here. When the incoming president says, oh, I'm not bound by conflict of interest laws. When you have a private entity that does considerable business, most of your business is actually overseas, you have a question of whether or not foreign governments can somehow impact the policies. We're hearing stories where countries literally are saying, oh, we need to actually go have events at the Trump Hotel to curry favor. That's not how you want to start a presidency where all the conversations is about conflicts of interest and ethical lapses.
Correct. But, you know, karma's real, man. Some of these things I don't worry about because the universe has a perfect accounting system.
What are they waiting on? I mean, karma for what? I mean, these people have been doing this stuff with Bush and Cheney. I mean, when the karma coming up?
Bush, former Texas Ranger.
Exactly.
No question.
We agree to disagree. I think the world sorts itself out, and I think that this will sort itself out. And with all due respect, God's still on the throne. And I think that somehow this universe has not managed to blow itself up, even though we keep trying. My middle name is Hope. I'm sorry.
Well, I think my view is
that we have more power than we give ourselves credit for.
I agree with that. That's a whole other thing. I definitely agree that we are completely powerful and don't realize that and don't tap into that because we don't believe in it. But sort it out is relevant to who's looking because, as far as a lot of people are concerned, things have been sorted out. He's president.
For the moment.
Yeah. Well,
there were Roman leaders.
The moment
for the
of
moment.
This kind of leadership has been all my life.
There was a guy named Nixon for the moment. There was a guy named Hitler
we all gonna
for
die,
the moment.
But
there was a guy named Mussolini.
Prototypically similar who keep coming back.
I'm not arguing with
and
you.
And we keep being prototypically passive.
Yeah.
And keep being prototypically rampant.
I think we're distracted.
Or karma, I'm sorry.
I think we're distracted. Well, Malcolm X says we've been bamboozled, we've been tricked, we've been fooled.
That's true.
And while we're sitting here arguing about some crumbs, somebody's still in the pie. And I just refuse to win battles and lose wars. I refuse to rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic. This is about money and economics. You just talked about Flint. That's poverty. If this was a wealthy city, they would not be having this
question.
Racialized policy.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Chris,
I want
to bring you in here, and bottom line is here. That is, Trump was supposed to hold a news conference to announce separation from his organization,
sure.
Cancel the news conference. Now they're floating. There might be half of a policy. No, you can't sit in that Oval Office and essentially still run your company.
No, the conflict of interest issues, and, you know, I am a true conservative. What concerns me most is the way the conflict situation has not been resolved. I am not sure that it's going to be resolved before he is sworn in. That's the concern for me. That's the issue here. These conflicts that keep coming up, problematic. There's no other way to explain it.
Hold tight 1 second. When we come back, folks, we're going to talk to Russian expert Terrell Starr about how the Trump presidency, they aren't even focused on Russia. That'll be a simulcast we do with the Tom Jordan Morning Show. It is 15 after the hour. News 1 now on TV 1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
All right, folks, we'll continue talking about, of course, incoming president, what is happening with Russia. Still more denials when it comes to their working alongside Russia when it comes to this election. Now, what is going to be their foreign policy plan? Will Russia be on the agenda? Let's have the simulcast with Tom Joyner.
It is 18 past the hour. Let's bring him in, Roland Martin. Good morning to you, Uncle Roland.
Skip Murphy, how are you doing?
Great, bro. Great.
All right, shout out to Sherry Shepherd, Tommy Davidson. What's happening?
What's up?
And who did I miss?
Jackie Reed.
So always good to chat with all of you. Good to be here as well. All right, so we are following, of course, what is going on with this incoming presidency, less than 30 days of President Barack Obama being the 44th president. And the Trump kids, Lord, they keep pimping the White House when it comes to, you know, now you're trying to sell up to 16 positions, pay $1 million, and get to hang out with the new president day after the inauguration, but the focus also is still on Russia, their impact on this election, the hacking of this election. Senator John McCain of Arizona still wants there to be a select committee to investigate this, but Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says no, the current committees can do just fine. That pressure is going to get ramped up. But the real question is, will a Trump administration even focus on Russia? Terrell Starr is one of the few African-Americans who is an expert on Russia. He's a journalist. He joins us right now. What's up, brother?
Hey, how you doing?
You've been, of course, covering these issues for a long time. And first and foremost, when you see the story came out just yesterday about the Trump administration's foreign policy plan, how in the world is Russia not even on it?
Well, you know, I think it's simple because I don't think Trump is genuinely interested in having an assertive policy towards Russia. If you look at the selection of his Secretary of State nominee and Rex Tillerson, if he is ultimately, if he ultimately passes the confirmation hearings and becomes our Secretary of State, he really has no incentive to be assertive for one. He's definitely not going to continue the sanctions that Obama started along with Europe. And so here's the thing. Exxon, they've lost close to $1 billion as a result of these sanctions. Because one of the things many people don't know is that through the sanctions, Americans cannot sell the necessary technology to Russia that they need in order to conduct drilling projects in the Arctic Circle. So I think it's pretty simple. If there's money to be gained, and I don't think that for Donald Trump, he gets in the way of that.
And look, what we're dealing with is Vladimir Putin wants to not only impact the American election, but you already see this impact of supporting far-right candidacies in other countries as well. I mean, this is Putin and Russia. He is a former head of the KGB using their intelligence, cyber warfare, to control the policies of other nations. This is a real threat.
Of course it is. And we see the recent developments happening over in Germany. And I think I've told you this before. What's more important here and I tell everyone this, that it's not so much about the technology and the fact that Russia is able to do it. The real question is, why does Putin think that his efforts are going to work? So I'll give you an example of that. In Germany, what's going on right now, Angela Merkel has actually called for people, you know, for a burger ban right now. And so, and Angela Merkel was one of the more liberal heads of state in Europe to say, no, we have to push back against this xenophobia that's taking place across Europe. But she's dealing with pressure in Germany as well. And so she has a number, she's running for chancellor for the third time, but she's dealing with some deep competition with opponents who feel that Germany has been too kind in allowing these quote-unquote Muslims to enter their country. And so she's had to engage more rhetoric that's xenophobic, which is really unbecoming of her. But again, that's ethnic strife. Here in America, I really believe that what happened with, like what went on in Estonia, what went on in Republic of Georgia or Ukraine, where I'm going next week to do some military reporting, there were always ethnic strife conflicts going on there between different ethnicities. The same place is staying the same place here in America. And I think the reason why so many Donald Trump supporters don't believe that the hacking actually took place is because they simply don't, because they simply believe that people are trying to undermine Trump's authority and his success. So it makes perfect sense for Trump, for Putin to do this, because they just simply think that it doesn't, they think he's being undermined.
Sherry Shepherd, Tommy Davidson. See, this is why you got to have black shows like the Tom Jordan Morning Show and TV One, because even we know how to find black Russian experts.
Yes. That's right. I didn't even know we had any. There you go.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Terrell Starr, we appreciate it, brother. Thanks a lot. How can folks reach you?
Thank you. Twitter, Russian_Starr. I'm always there.
All right, then. Well, be safe when you go to Ukraine. Bring a brother souvenir back.
I certainly will.
All right, Skip Murphy, y'all have a great Christmas.
All right, same to you, bro.
You
great
too.
Job.
Happy
appreciate
holidays.
You.
All right, then.
You,
holla, Jackie Reed.
All right.
Folks, when we come back on News One Now, a new survey finds that Trump voters think African Americans have been getting just way too much stuff. We'll also deal with this whole issue of who's an average American or a real American? Why is it when that phrase is stated, we're not included? Plus, we'll find out more about Operation Hope's financial literacy programs from its founder and CEO, John Hope Bryan. 24 after the hour, News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, y'all, since the election, political pundits have blamed Democrats for ignoring white working class Americans who came out in droves to vote for Donald Trump. But the Huffington Post recently did a survey which found that Trump supporters were more motivated by something else. The website found that Trump supporters believe that black folks are less deserving than average Americans. In fact, when you hear the phrase average Americans, they don't even include us. That viewpoint was the main dividing line between Clinton and Trump supporters. In fact, if you look at respondents were asked if they agreed with the statement that average Americans have gotten less than they deserve. More than half of Trump and Clinton voters agreed. Yes. Well, but when respondents were asked if blacks have gotten less than they deserve over the past few years, 57% of Clinton folks said yes. Just 12% of Trump voters said yes. 62% of black folks said yes. Overall, 28% of white said yes. Now, also want to throw this out there, because when you talk about this whole issue of who's a real American, when you hear that phrase, are you included in that? Not only that, when you hear this discussion of the working class in America, why is that somehow excluding black folks who work and Latinos who work? In fact, people of color are actually, if you look at the various stats, the hardest working people in the country. Let's talk about it. John Hope Bryant, Angela Rye, Greg Carr, Chris Metzler, Cleo Monago. See, this is what's interesting to me, because, look, I'm in the words business, and I tell people you have to listen. During Donald Trump's, a lot of his rallies, he would talk about, we are going to put America back to work, and we're going to help the African-Americans and the Latinos. And I told people, listen to phrases. Mm-hmm. What he was saying is, I'm going to help y'all, and we're going to do something about them. That's really what this poll speaks to. And I think a lot of people just don't understand there's this otherness, if you will. I'm going to use Newt Gingrich's phrase for President Obama when he got elected. There's this otherness about him. We are seen as this otherness.
Roland, that's why what you've been doing by putting Reverend Barber out front with this fusion agenda is very important. It is never, non-whites have never been real Americans. And then you see the Democrats getting ready to quadruple down on this silly fantasy that they can pursue these somehow missing white voters. It's a reinforcement of whiteness. They're playing into the hands of racists.
Even the term non-whites is a reinforcement
of course
of whiteness.
Of course.
We're saying we are non.
No, of course.
And how we think and how it impacts how we behave and how we see things, and we're involved in this thinking, which is why we haven't resisted enough to become so-called real Americans, whatever the heck that is.
I don't know if we ever can.
Well, in some respects, though, we also perpetuate that myth. When we talk about affirmative action, for example, as much as I've worked in this industry, I have never heard someone say to me, bring me employees, white employees who are qualified. Yet what we say is we're going to hire African Americans and other minorities who are qualified.
Well, that's not really. I mean, in fact, that's what was being driven. What happened? Because I've actually done panels where I would stop. I say, hold up, don't use a qualified. Because when you talk about white folks, you don't use a qualified.
That's right.
So it's adopting sort of that language. And again, and I've had to tell black people who are in HR. Listen to what you're saying. You are reinforcing another narrative.
Well, but that is exactly my point. So when I say we, the people who are in diversity work, the people who are in HR work, we are taking that language and adopting it. Because in a lot of respects, what we're saying is we don't want to lower the standards. I think we have to be conscious of that as well.
I think a couple things. One is I think that we don't do that. I think that that's an overgeneralization, and there are probably some on the fringe that do that, but I know certainly the diversity work that I've done, I never say that, and in fact, I challenge it the same way that Roland does. I want to get back to this poll, though, because I think it's important. When we look at exit polling data from this election, it says very clearly that Hillary Clinton won voters on the economy. Where she did not win is on fighting terrorism, which is code for Muslims and supporting a Muslim ban. Where she did not win is on supporting immigration, which we know is code for being anti-Mexican or anti-brown. People don't know for some reason that black people and white people also immigrate here. I think that we have to then understand that that is, again, a racial issue. She did not win on issues of race. Donald Trump won an us versus them campaign. He ran it and he won it. And I think that we have to be honest now in saying we hear Trump voters all the time talking about identity politics. Stop using identity politics. Well, white identity politics is what galvanized and went out to vote. The get out the vote effort was on white identity politics.
John, Tom Barreau has a book called Brainwash, and he talked about this history in America of how folks have been brainwashed. And in this country, I don't care where you go, if you throw out poverty, and polling that will show it, instantly they'll think, oh, talking about black people.
That's right.
Okay. I've challenged people to say, I'm like, look, numbers don't lie. When LBJ launched the war on poverty, he didn't go to the Delta.
Right.
He went to the no teeth folks in West Virginia.
Yeah,
No. I'm saying it for real. I'm saying no teeth because they didn't have dental.
No health.
They didn't have health care.
Right.
And then when you hear folks say, well, you vote Democrat, oh my God, poor folks, you know, this Charles Barkley quote, poor folks have been voting Democrat for 50 years, they're still poor. Some of the brokest states in America are red states.
Including his home state, Alabama.
A third of every federal dollar in Mississippi, the state that says they reject federal policy, they don't want federal help, is a federal dollar, as an example. That's the poorest state in America. Look, we're rearranging the deck chairs in the Titanic in many ways because we're talking about black and brown and white, whatever. The real issue is green. Whether you're white, black, red, brown, or yellow, what everybody want to see is some more green. And we're not, there's no real progressive strategic agenda around changing that reality. The reality is there's more poor whites in America, which is your point, than poor anybody else, but no one raises that point. But a 500 credit score neighborhood looks the same, whether you're white rural or black urban. You have a check casher next to a payday loan lender, next to a rent-to-own store, next to a title lender, next to a liquor store, all feeding on poverty, financial literacy, low tax base, and depression. And that's whether you're white, rural, or urban, or outside of a military base. That drives all of this hate and depression that somebody is running for office and feeding on. And I want to change that.
But when you hear a poll, when you hear the poll where there's this belief that, oh, they're getting more stuff.
It's economic, Roland. No. This happened in 1935 with Hitler. He was jailed in 1925 as a crackpot. And then they saluted him in 1939. Nothing, the only thing that changed was that the Germans' economy fell apart. And so they started looking for somebody else to blame. This has been, whenever you have racial strife, you have economic strife 10 years before it. This is as old as the history itself, and I'm suggesting we're being punked.
And Chris, we saw this in California when they passed the amendment targeting illegal immigrants. That was because the California economy tanked largely due to the closure of military bases.
Correct.
But it was, yo, we got to blame somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. And
this is economic.
This is economic. I absolutely agree with you. It is the racialized piece first, and then you get into the economic catastrophes. And I think this conversation, this election conversation, a lot of it has to do with economics.
If you look at things based on facts and formulas, it does get down to finances. When you look at things in terms of the hunger for power and the hunger to retain white supremacy, all that stuff goes out of the water.
With all due respect,
white folks are willing to be.
Let's stop there. White supremacy. Let's stop there. No.
Wait.
I don't want to stop.
I'm going to go to John. Finish your point.
The whole issue around black people deserving is a code for dehumanizing us compared to white folks, no matter what goes on. Mm-hmm. And we have to understand that the reason why we keep on losing compared to other people as a collective, we have individuals who get some stuff, but as a collective people compared to Asians and whites and everybody else, we keep on being on the back end of the stick because we won't take a look at what's going on here in this society in terms of how white supremacy influences our own thinking.
I'm about to say something that's going to anger everybody, which
go
is
ahead.
Fine. I'm 71% Cameroon, African. Then I'm 26% European. The rest is Asian, Indian, and other. We're all mixed race. So if I hate white folks, I hate myself. If you want to make the Grand Master of Ku Klux Klan have a heart attack, give him a DNA test because he's part black.
Brother Brian.
So that's a separate issue.
I got it.
The white supremacist middle class person who lives somewhere in Atlanta who voted for DT, I'm going to call his name, they weren't white supremacists. They lost their job in 2009 making $100,000 a year. They're decent, God-loving people. They didn't get the job for 2 years. And when they got rehired, they make $50,000 a year, half their pay. They're pissed off. They're frustrated. Then they look at TV and they say, I don't recognize this country. I can't get a job. No one's batting for me.
Let me finish my sentence.
And that person gets pimped by somebody who's running on a fear agenda saying somebody else is your problem.
Right.
And I think by us feeding into this narrative that all white people are the devil just pits them against us.
Green, right? I apologize if I misunderstood.
But you know better than anybody here. Finance is international.
Yes, sir.
White supremacy is global. When you see these alliances between the far right parties in France and in Germany and other places and Donald Trump, what you're seeing is people are being fooled domestically, but money knows no national border. Yes. Meaning what? Domestically, they use race, they use these things, but finance capital is going to make a whole lot of money. And with all due respect, acting like we can somehow get in that game and win it, we're the reason they have the money in the first place, brother.
We can win this game.
We built this country for free.
Amen.
We've never been paid for that.
That's right.
And the fact, to get back to the point, which is whether or not we are deserving, the fact that people don't see that we are deserving when we were never paid for what we've done has all types of racial animus and oppression tied to it. If we continue to ignore the fact that people find targets who are other, who are black, who are brown, who are Asian, who are different from what they deem as real American, when we all know that real American looked nothing like the white pilgrim that came.
Say that right
now. Like, let's just be really clear.
That's right.
So I'm not saying that this is about people who were punked or bamboozled or anything. I'm saying the reality of that, the reason why they were able to succumb to that, is because they needed someone to blame, and that is about a white superiority complex.
Agreed.
That does not mean
Agreed.
That economics is not at the root of it, but I'm saying let's not pretend that racism isn't front and center.
So, John said we can win at this. Well, we come back. Hold on. Oh, everybody calm down. This is still my show.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
When we come back, calm down. When we come back, we will hear his game plan for winning. That's next, News 1 Now, TV 1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
All right, folks, the American Banker magazine is named John Hope Bryan, the 2016 Innovator of the Year. Of course, we've been talking about, he's been on the panel throughout the show, CEO of the nonprofit group Operation Hope, which educates poor and middle-class Americans on financial issues such as how to avoid foreclosures, building credit, and inspiring folks to start their own small businesses. We've been sitting here talking about these issues, and so, of course, you guys have hope inside. When you say we can win at this, how?
By the way, that's the first time in 200 years of banking they put a black person in that role.
Well, first, congratulations, because the fact is 2016, by the end of 2017, we still haven't first is significant there. So
across the street from the White House, the building called Treasury Annex. Abraham Lincoln in 1865 signed legislation, Freedmen's Bureau, which created the Freedmen's Bank. The Freedmen's Bank's mission, teach freed slaves about money. He thought the most important thing he could do after the Civil War was to bring blacks into the free enterprise system. 2 months before that was 40 acres and a mule. It's Field Action 15. So you had 400,000 acres, then you had the mule, that was January, February, then you had a bank to finance the crops, and then he was killed in April. Frederick Douglass tried to run the bank in Lincoln's absence, but the bank had been pimped and manipulated. The bank
and Douglass put in
$10,000 of his own money, $20 million today.
Of $20 million today.
No broke man.
Come on.
So he wasn't just an abolitionist; he was a businessman that owned property in Baltimore and Anacostia. In fact, his property is still there in Anacostia today. We should go tour it. And he had the freedom to be able to say what he wanted, do what he wanted, and go write his own check to a government he knew wouldn't get the money back. When the bank failed, he said the failure of this bank did more to set free slaves in America back than 10 more years of slavery.
That's right.
And that was 1874. Pop your fingers. You fast forward 100 years to Dr. King and my mentor, Andrew Young, our mentor, 68, in Memphis with the Poor People's Campaign, trying to redistribute wealth, and he gets killed before his first march on Washington. Here's my theory. It's not like we tried free enterprise and capitalism and ownership, and we screwed it up. We never got the memo. There's a memo on money and free enterprise, and we never got the memo, and I'm going to help deliver the memo. So we renamed the Freedmen's Bank, the Treasury Annex building, the Freedmen's Bank building, January this year, so nobody seems to know about it. And we're opening 1,000 Hope Inside locations.
Y'all know, we covered on TV once.
Yes, you did. Right. We're opening 1,000 Hope Inside locations inside of bank branches, inside of grocery stores, big box retailers, hospitals, houses of faith, government offices. Ebenezer was the first one. And people say I'm a dreamer. People say I'm crazy. I have 400 orders in 2 years. We're moving credit scores 120 points in 24 months, and nothing changes your life more than God or love than moving your credit score 120 points, because 700 credit score communities don't riot. Whoa. 500 credit score communities riot. And so we're going to move the economics up. We're going to get the GDP up. We're going to create homeowners and entrepreneurs and make this so that banks can say yes to borrowers versus if you 500 credit score, they're going to say no to you. I don't care what color you are. You 550 credit score, 580 credit score, 620 credit, you're still going to get a no. You're 680, you're 700. My mother's 815. They don't even know what race she is. The answer is yes. Whatever my mother wants, yes. So we have popped the bank referral approval rate at all these places we're at. We're in Whole Foods because their employees need it. We're in Hyatt Hotels because their employees need it. We're at Ebenezer Church. We're in City Halls. We're in Ferguson, Missouri. We're in 40 banks. First in nonprofit.
Is that lead to black banks, brother?
We're going into black banks.
The Freedmen's Bank failed because the speculators spent all the money. Black veterans put their money in those banks. Yeah. It wasn't because of black financial illiteracy.
It was manipulated.
So will this ultimately mean we will have institutions we own and control? Because that's what gives you political power. Yeah, Fred Douglass, as you know, they made him the ambassador to Haiti. Got down there, and the Haitians said, we're not talking to you. Why? The government already told us you're not in charge. Yeah. So in other words, this isn't just about a few individuals getting wealth. This is about institutions.
Be clear, I'm a nonprofit, just so you're clear.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a nonprofit.
Sure.
So. In fact, all our services are free. Everything I just told you.
Subsidized by white banks that are going to make a lot of money off this.
I want them to make money.
Yeah, but
I want them to make money. Did anybody hear this? I want you to make money. What's wrong with? Okay. I want you to make.
And now it begins to unravel. See, this is the important thing, man. We're talking about institutions, not individuals. Capitalism. The lie they sell us is about. It's about individuals.
You have a job. You're a capitalist.
Listen, man. When we go back to the Trumps, you see these grifters. These grifters are dealing with institutions.
Don't put my name and his in the same.
Well, no, but you gotta think that way. If you're not thinking about institution building.
So, but here's the question. I'll pose to y'all. Because first, let me say this here. I've only got about four more seconds.
By the way, I got 3 million customers today.
I've only got 4 more minutes.
2 billion invested in inner city.
I've only got 4 minutes left in this segment. And so what we'll do is, after January, what we'll actually do is we'll actually do this topic for a whole hour.
Wow.
Okay?
Perfect.
So we'll do that. But let me throw this out. It's part of the mistake that we as African Americans, we are having constant political discussions, but we simply don't control our own politics. Isn't it simply a question of, if you do not have a strong economic base, everything else is irrelevant?
No, that's true.
Right.
That's very true.
I don't know if everything else is irrelevant, but
irrelevant. If you ain't got your own money to control your situation, you swimming upstream.
I think that's partially true. I think the other part of it is you're less likely to pay attention to your political power when you're just struggling to keep your lights on. I think that absolutely is the case. But I also think that it's high time for us to pay attention to both. We've always traditionally been able to crack open a little bit, at least, the political process a hell of a lot easier than we have the economic
process. Here's a challenge.
We always talk about
black folks are the only people in the world who created who created a political power base before an economic one. I'm not criticizing that. I'm saying that's
the only thing we could do. Oh, I didn't know that it was going to cause.
No. Cleo.
We always talk about if people are poor, they don't try to access political power. Sometimes when people get rich, they try to become white. And when they get a lot of economic power, they try to assimilate and be as white as they can be and mimic that culture instead of being working on behalf of black people. We always talk about how black people. Well, a lot of times black people want to be, not all black people, first of all, I don't want to generalize like that, but I'm trying to do a contrast here in terms of the assumption that if you're poor, you're politically disinterested. A lot of people that I've met before who are black and wealthy are politically disinterested too when it comes to black power and transforming black communities into powerful places. They become white and they become part of the so-called elite and they're gone.
Come to Atlanta.
We always talk about black people leaving black communities once they get a certain type of job and never coming back.
Well, I don't understand what you mean by they become white.
They become part of a white culture, and they don't necessarily involve themselves.
Let's make it very, very clear. What you see, Carver National Bank, you can draw a straight line from the end of enslavement to today. And every time you see these black institutions,
Carver
financial institutions,
sister,
economic
Debbie,
institutions.
Debbie Wright.
No, absolutely. What we can't do is ignore what Cleo is saying here. This question of assimilation is very real. It's a cultural question, it's a political question, and it is, as Roland says, an economic question.
And it's a self-esteem problem.
Well, yeah, but guess what? It's not one that we inherited from ourselves.
We don't disagree.
We don't. In that regard, we don't.
And some of us think like the same white folks who think we don't deserve anything. I mean, it says 62% supported somebody.
Anyway,
the bottom line is that
Let me ask you, you moved into inside white banks after starting as an independent institution, right? A brick and mortar institution. And then you moved into white banks, right? My question, this is a very basic question. How many of the people that you're helping, and I'm very happy about you here, you helped, how many of these folks have their money, including all of us, in black banks?
I don't question whether
it's not either or, is what you're saying.
Go ahead. Okay. Literally, I got 30 seconds.
Do it next time. I don't question where my people have their money. I ask you, do you want a home? You want to become a homeowner? Do you want to become a small business owner? Let me help you do that. That's my job.
Okay. See, it's very focused. Very, very financial focused. It's not black power
focused. Okay. Andrew, have anything to say? That's it? Okay. All right. So I've already told y'all what we're going to do. We're going to end up having a whole hour conversation on this app. Well, I just said it.
I agree. Can I be the amen quarter?
Good.
You were mad. To say 2 seconds ago, I was saying amen.
Look, don't let me have to cut you.
Church.
Okay, let me thank our panel, John, Cleo, Chris, Greg, maybe Angela.
We shall overcome.
All right. Up next, Wildin' Out Wednesday. Well, hell, this is already a Wildin' Out panel. Our comedians next, News 1 on TV 1.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.
All right, y'all. Welcome back to News 1 Now on TV 1. First of all, I know y'all got some comments. Send me a tweet, if you will, about the conversation we just had. Also, birthday shout-outs, NFL player Mark Ingram. He turns 27 years old today. R&B legend Betty Wright
the cleanup woman, turned 63. Samuel L. Jackson turned 68 years old on this day in history in 1976. Patricia Roberts Harris becomes the first black woman appointed to a presidential cabinet position when President Jimmy Carter names her Secretary of the Department of Housing and Urban Development. In 1969, Diana Ross, the boss, makes her final television appearance as a member of the Supremes on The Ed Sullivan Show. And Fences, folks, speaking of that, it's also historical. Fences will be released in theaters nationwide on Christmas Day, and we'll be celebrating with a News One Now special, a conversation with the cast of Fences, featuring sit-downs with several members of the cast and a one-on-one with Denzel Washington. You don't want to miss this, so tune in Friday, 7 a.m. Eastern, right here on TV One. All right, folks, we're back with our panel, Wednesday comedians joining us. Tony Woods, Tony, how you doing?
Hey, man, I'm good.
Looking all dapper, got the vest and everything. Look at him.
It's Christmas, man.
All right, go ahead, Deacon. We have Dale Harrison.
How are you?
Dale, how you doing? I saw you over there. You were streaming while you're in the makeup chair. And y'all, seriously, I got two comedians. I actually have three. Can I get the name of the other comedian? This is not in the prompter.
Yeah.
Please introduce yourself. See how they do the non-black comedian?
Yeah, no, it's all good. I'm the minority here.
Okay, but you got to, see, somebody telling me it's in a prompter. Yeah, but you kind of got to scroll it up to it so I can see the name. Martin Amini. Martin, how you doing?
Good, Roland. Thank you for having me.
All right, then. Glad y'all here. So, Tony, where you been? Because, see, normally when Tony comes here, he's been traveling somewhere around the world. I saw your Russian hat. As you were changing.
Which I got in Amsterdam. But check this out. I went to Africa twice this year. I went to Aruba.
Where country. In Africa?
Not Africa, Africa. I was in Seychelles. It's an island off the coast of Africa.
Okay, but it's that is Africa.
I know, but not like, you know, wasn't like, you know, I was like the darkest one, so.
Okay, where else?
Aruba a couple times. But the big thing is going, doing my documentary. And then, I'm going to New Zealand.
Yeah, Tony does not perform in the United States.
They won't.
No, he doesn't.
What can I get? Can I go on one of these tours?
Shorty, all you need is a passport.
I got a passport.
Martin, you got a passport?
It's expired, but I do have a passport.
that ain't gonna work. That's not gonna work.
You can't be looking like you with an expired passport. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
It's rough times, bro.
Right, it's going to be a little rough. Are y'all, as comedians, are y'all really prepared for 4 years of Donald Trump?
You know what? I think this is about to be the funniest presidency of all times. I mean, funnier than Bush, because this is going to be the first time where we have a president responding to official issues on Twitter. You know, that is strictly social media. You know, like, that's strictly for the people, not for the president.
Okay, hold on one second. See, I don't know what they were thinking. You got them big old chain link earrings on.
What?
Baby, your microphone. You hit the doggone microphone.
And that
clapping is driving me crazy. I got
to
do every damn thing. Around
right
here. I got change.
Right
I got
TV,
change
y'all.
Microphones over here. Just put in the middle. Okay, there we go. All right.
The black man work.
Lord!
He gotta be PA. He gotta work. He gotta
Jesus.
That's what's up, man. He's a busy dude.
Are you ready for Trump?
Man, I'm ready, man. Once I saw him in Home Alone 2, I was like, yo, this is gonna be funny as hell, man. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to make fun of him for the next 4 years. I think comedically it's gonna be great, but for my family it's gonna be terrible. You know what I mean? I'm half Latino, half Middle Eastern, so. Both sides.
Oh no, no, you gotta carry your papers with you at all times.
Right, it's gonna be tough, man. I'm gonna try to blend in and wear cardigans for the next 4 years and see if, you know, that keeps me out of trouble. You know? Hopefully, you know, J. Crew's got me.
I'll get you a Tony Woods vest.
Tony Woods vest. That's
boom.
It.
Made out of sheep's butts. Hey, you know what?
Stop. Made out of sheep's butts.
Whatever, the stuff you shave off the sheep's. Look, man, I thought you was gonna ask me a serious question. Are you worried about is my waistcoat?
What the, no, but you said sheep's butt.
What would you? We did the best fur. This is like the fur off their butt.
I think I got a little sheep's butt on myself. You know,
it's a good look. Feel it. What? It's a good look, man.
You don't ask a grown man you don't know to feel your clothes.
I didn't want her to reach over here and then bang out on the microphone.
Okay. I think he already got me straight, you know?
I would have asked you, man, but so busy doing so much other stuff, so.
Does anybody know what the hell Tony's talking about? let me just go to a break so I'll be back in 60 seconds.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, y'all. Welcome back. Dale Harrison with the chain link earrings. Seriously, that's like some... That's like a rapper from the 80s. We got Martin Amini, who's half Middle Eastern, half Latino. You know he ain't gonna be in America long. And we got sheep's butt wearing Tony Woods. Tony, you got something happening this weekend?
I do. I'm taping my documentary special at the DC Improv.
What's the special?
It's a documentary about me, because people always ask me questions. People like you always say, what are you talking about?
So you doing a documentary just asking you random questions?
No, no. I'm gonna do comedy. You're going to see me in places. You're going to see me, like, in New Zealand with sheeps. You're going to see me...
What's up with you and sheeps?
Because I got the vest, so it's just right this on the forefront of my mind right now. But look, I got chased by mosquitoes in Africa, all kind of good stuff. You're going to see it all on the documentary. It's like a travel show with jokes. Why do you never look like that when everybody else be ranting on the show, man?
No, because they actually form full sentences that I fully understand.
But see, that's what it is. It's going on a curb. You know what I'm saying?
Martin Dill, do y'all know what he's talking about?
Not when it comes to the sheep butts, but I've definitely been chased by some African mosquitoes.
Yeah.
Not in Africa, though, right in New Orleans, because, you know, that's mosquito land. That's where I'm from.
Okay.
You know?
All right, y'all. Well, we got to go. This is our last show of the year. We got a gospel special featuring Donna McClurkin. We got Fences. I already covered that. So y'all check out all the specials. I'm on vacation. Holla, Lord Jesus.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin. Every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.